Hey bro, what's that hot server's story? The blonde.
Well, I mean, the story is, I'm fucking her, but I can't tell you that.
What can I get you? Drunk? Welcome to episode 33 of Behind Bars, Cocktails, and Wasted Nights. I'm your host, Greg. I've been working as a bartender for over 20 years, and over those years, I've seen a lot. My goal here is to share some of those high and low lights with you. Quick warning, this podcast contains sex, drugs, and some language that isn't suitable for anyone under 21 years of age, so you gotta have some ID. Before we get this show on the road, I gotta bring some folks to the front of the line. Shout out to Yay for Day! Thinly veiled code name, I think, for an Amazeballs review. Thanks, Yay. Another huge rail of gratitude goes to Hizezvezzix for the amazing written 5-star. What a name. Hey, Hizezvezzix. Can I buy a vowel? Just kidding. No offense if you're Icelandic. Amos 4, your review is beyond flattering, and I've got the vapors. I hope you don't hear me blushing. Seriously. I'm so glad you're laughing at my life. I laugh at it too once the tears stop. But seriously, drive carefully while listening. Megdon92 kept it short and sweet, but those 5 words and 5 stars go a long way to getting the news out. Thank you so much. Let them know, people. Let them know. And last but not least, the hot brunette. I'd be remiss if I gave anything less than a rock-hard appreciation of your review. I hope you feel that appreciation grow deep inside. You. Okay, calm down, Greg. The hot brunette is just a username. No one catfishes on Apple Podcasts, right? Jeez, where was I? Oh yeah, the episode. You lying saints got me all jammed up. No, seriously, thanks for the love, the feedback, the listens. Okay, before we get started, you'll need a drink. For this one, I recommend the Kiss Me, I'm Chirish. It's a Jameson cocktail, and since James showed up in a Jameson tee for his interview, I was wearing one too, BT Dubs, jinx, I figured we'd do a Jameson tee cocktail. See what I did there? Jameson tee, am I right? What's the deal with... Never mind, let's move on. In a mixing tin, combine 1/4 ounce of lemon juice, 2 ounces of chai tea, and 2 ounces of Jameson. Shake, dirty dump into a tumbler, top with soda water, and garnish with a lemon wheel and enjoy. And if you don't have any of that, blow your nose to make room, swallow a shot of tequila and move the lung fire around, then scoop up a respectable amount of blizz out of your bag with your key and powder your nose. There. Now don't you feel disturbingly better? Okay. Without further ado, except for me saying without further ado, here's my interview with Boston James, an East Coast bartender living and working in Colorado. How original. All right, folks, welcome to Behind Bars, Cocktails, and Wasted Nights. I am here with Boston James. What's up, Boston James?
What's happening, Greg?
Chilling, buddy, chilling. Thanks for coming out tonight. I've seen you in action, man, behind the bar. You're pretty good, man. Like, you take a lot of shit, you eat the shit, and you put mustard on it.
That's for sure.
That's part of the job, right?
Yeah. That's one thing that I catch myself occasionally forgetting I'm not in Boston anymore and having to tone down exactly.
You gotta be nice to these Denverites. They're sensitive.
They are, yes.
So how'd you get into it?
I've been bartending for quite a few years now. I mean, I first started back in Boston at Longhorn Steakhouse, actually.
It's like a chain, right?
It is a chain, yeah.
Oh, my God. So you had to go, like, buy the book.
Oh, yes.
But you learned your shit, right?
I sure did, yeah. I actually had no intentions of working front of the house. When I first applied, I was applied to work in the kitchen. And the manager came out, and just to be like a prep cook or something like that.
Oh God, and you avoided a life of meth.
Yes, and I honestly, the manager came out and asked me 2 questions. First question was, "Can I speak Portuguese?" I said, "No, I cannot." Next question was, "All right, okay, can you speak Spanish?" I was like, "I can understand a little bit." And he's like, "All right, well, if that's the case, you're useless in my kitchen."
No puedo hablar español, lo siento.
Yes. So then he's like, "Well, we are hiring for a host." And I was like, "Well, does it pay? Because I just need a job at the time." And then hosted for 6 months, became a server, served for 1 year, and then onto the bar from there.
Oh, dude, I can't serve tables, man. Like, I forget, like, what beer was what once I turn around and I get to the table. I don't know who had what. Like, I could never do it. I don't know how you do it. Plus, I dropped a tray. That's, like, my secret. I've always bartended, like, bar back. I've just been behind the bar. I need that flat surface, that one long table in front of me.
So that's where the one difference was. I used to smoke a lot of weed back then, so that's where, you know, I could wait tables stoned because it was fine. Like, I would just, I would write everything down and then just walk away. I'd be able to disappear from the table.
The walking away is the key to serving,
Whereas being behind the bar, I was stuck there having to focus. I'm like, all right, well, I can't be too stoned. I need to keep conversations with these people.
Yeah, I got to talk to you guys. Oh, I have to go over here and polish this Angostura Bitters bottle.
Exactly, yes, yep.
So, so you're at the, what is it called, Longhorn Steakhouse,
yeah.
And so it's a chain. Everything everything goes like hunky-dory. You're by the book. Nothing crazy happens at a chain, right?
That's what you would think. But I will tell you one of the things is that's the first bar I learned of how to drink while working.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
How'd you get away with that there?
So this is where one of my buddies, who was also a bartender and server, between the two of us, depending on who was working where, like whether you on the floor behind the bar, is we figured out pretty quickly that if you ring in a kid's milk, it would print up a service ticket through the service bar, and manager's never going to walk over and check to make sure that you're making the actual drink that's on the ticket. So that was our code for a shot or a drink or whatever. And so, yeah, so, you know, we'd ring something, I'd see a kid's milk come in, I'd look around and be like, do you actually need one? I'm like, it's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Are you guys doing the number inventory thing, like the point nines and the point eight at this point?
Oh, no, because it was like an individual, like, kid's milk is how it was sold, and we only kept them behind the bar.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So, I mean,
this is amazing.
Yeah. So, we would just be like, all right, that'd be code for pour a shot, and then as a server, it'd be up to you to put it into, like, a to-go cup so the manager wouldn't see it sitting there.
It's like a staff meeting.
Yes.
Staff meeting. And then anything of note happened there, or is it just, like, how long were you there? Like, anything weird happened while you were there?
So, that was, I was there for 4 years. That was the first place I worked in Boston, and the craziest thing that did happen there was it just so happened to be, so let me preface this real quick, it was the day before, so it was the Cuatro de Mayo, so this day of all this happening,
May
Cinco
the 4th
de Mayo,
be yes. with you.
May exactly, the fourth yes, May you. The 4th be with you, yep. I had gone out knowing that I had to work Cinco de Mayo, and so I had gone out and celebrated the night before
on
with
Trace
a couple
de
of
Mayo.
My friends. Yes, and Cuatro, but and totally forgot that there was also a Red Sox game that day, which my dad had bought tickets for us to go to. So I wake up extremely hungover on Cinco de Mayo, forgetting my dad's on his way down from New Hampshire to go to this game. Go to the game. I'm, like I said, so hungover. I disappeared for 3 innings to try and shovel a hot dog into my face and like spend $13 or $15 on 2 waters or something like that.
Yeah. Right.
And then go into work afterwards. So we already said, yes, this is Cinco de Mayo and a Red Sox home game. Also happens to be the Kentucky Derby the same day.
Oh.
So
all
I show
Sunday
up.
The drivers are out.
Yes, I show up to work that night after going to the game, and one of the bartenders I work with is like, "Hey, just keep an eye on these two guys. You know, they were here before the game. Then they went to the game. They're here after the game. You know, so they've had quite a few." It's like, all right. Now remember, this is Longhorn Steakhouse. It's a chain restaurant. You know, so there's tons of families and stuff that come around, and these two guys happen to just clearly be wasted and are screaming obscenities and all this shit, shooting around, you know, talking all this shit. And I had repeatedly told them that they needed to calm down. They needed to stop swearing and using that language because of the kids and everything around there. So, as I said, I went to the game with my dad. So my dad's sitting at one of the tables right behind. And as the last time finally reached, I told these guys, all right, if you don't stop, you're going to have to leave. And this customer turned to me and goes, "Fuck you, I'm just here to watch the race," and pointed at the Kentucky Derby race on the TV right behind me. So I looked at him and I go, "Oh, you're here to watch this race? Oh, okay." And I grabbed the TV remote and turned the TV off. And I said, "Now you need to leave." And he's like, "Ooh, all right. Well, tough guy there. You're going to do that? We're just going to watch on the other TV over here." And as he turned, that's when my coworker, same guy I used to do shots with, happened to be standing right there and goes, "No, you need to leave." which then quickly erupted in us dragging them to get through the double doors, out through the front. They smash into this little half wall with a basket of mints, because there's always a basket of mints, you know, at these chain restaurants.
Yeah.
The mints go flying across.
There's not people, the mints.
Yeah, people waiting in line, trying to come into this chain restaurant right down the street from Fenway. And we finally get them out the front doors, and this is when the craziest thing happens. All right.
It gets worse.
I'm so hungover as this is happening, and I see this guy wind up to take a swing at me. And I'm like, all right, well, here comes a punch. And so I watched it, and I swear to God, it's like halfway through his punch, he decided he didn't want to throw this punch because it was the softest thing I've ever taken in my life.
It's like the slowest punch. It's like watching Vince Wilfork return a interception for a touchdown.
Oh, literally, yeah. And it hit me square in the forehead, and my only initial response, because of how soft it was, that's it? I was like, that's all you got? And as those words came out, my dad comes climbing over behind me, swinging at these guys, trying to get them to get out the fire, like the rest of the restaurant. And then right following behind him comes my Asian manager, coming with a broom as she'd been sweeping up around the restaurant, and just starts screaming, "Get out of my restaurant! Get out of my restaurant!"
Jesus. It's a tough day at the office.
Yes.
Oh, God. I've never really had to deal with that. I've always worked in places like with good security and stuff like that. But you wouldn't think you'd need that at a chain restaurant.
No.
God, who are these people? All right, so you were there. And then where was the next spot after that?
So after that, at that same time, this is where I eventually end up getting fired from there for oversleeping a shift. But, you know, it's typical bartender stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a call from my buddy who was another manager being like, "Hey, man, do you know what time it is?" And I said, "Yes." He's like, "Well, you better put your best ass kissing face on," as I showed up and got fired that day.
They always let you go in. They always let you shower, get ready, go in, and then they give you the guillotine.
Yep, exactly.
Just tell me. Save me some time. Yeah. Save us both some time.
Yeah. So at that time, I was barbacking and working security at another bar that's actually attached to Fenway as well. So that's why I still had that at least going. And then from there, I mean, I bounced around a few other bars around Boston, Faneuil Hall, you know, Clark's, Hennessy's, you know, a couple different places around.
That's going to be tough doing security out there. Aren't there, like, fights at Faneuil Hall, like, every night at, like, 2:15?
Oh, there are, yes. So that's actually one of the funniest things I used to do. So I was good at checking IDs. That was my big thing. So they had, when I worked at Hennessy's, they had me at the front door, and I had my muscle guy next to me. Okay, that he was literally just paid to stand there.
And just intimidate people.
And so people would come up all the time. Like, if I'm busy checking ID, they try and hand him an ID, and I would just be like, "Oh, no, he can't read. He can't read. Yeah, no, I got to take it over here.
Yeah. Can't do math or read, so give me that."
Yeah.
All right, so then, so you're in Faneuil Hall. Fights every night at 2:30. You're doing security. Like, did you ever get, like, tangled in another one? I mean, it seemed like seems like trouble finds you, James.
So, yeah, a little bit. I mean, that's when it comes to the fights, that's where most of the places in Boston, if you're ever out there, you'll realize they have stopped focusing on the bigger people working security, and it's more about the numbers.
Right.
So that's where, like, when I worked at that bar by Fenway, I mean, there would be anywhere from 10 to 13 of us working at a time. So you would just see, I mean, these were all college kids too, like 19-year-old kids, 20-year-old kids.
Yeah, that's Boston though.
Yeah.
How many colleges out there? Like 50?
Yeah, it's like over 50.
Yeah, it's like half the population from September to May.
Yeah.
And so you're in Colorado. How did that happen?
After living in Boston for 10 or so years, you know, decided I wanted to change. I'd always talked to people, you know, I got back into snowboarding and everything, so I always wanted to check out Colorado. So I had moved out here with my now ex. That's a whole nother story.
Welcome back.
Initially, that was, when I first moved out here. Lived here for about a year, moved back. She needed to be closer to family. That dissolved anyways. Another story for another time.
All right, we'll tell that story another time. You want to tell the story?
No, it's not really good, and then, so I was back in Boston for a bit, bartending a little bit, and pandemic hit, and I'd actually planned to be back here in fall, this past fall, so it would have been 2020,
Turns out you're a way better snowboarder than you thought when you move out here and like ride these mountains. Yeah, you're like, I can actually turn left. None of the ice like from New Hampshire and Vermont.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's where I learned actually how to ride with speed here.
Yeah,
because out there I was just so nervous skating across the ice everywhere.
Any other places in Boston that you you worked at? I was at Wonder Bar and Sophia's. I don't know if you ever heard of those two places.
I've heard of both of them. Yeah, Wonder Bar is. See, this is where a difference. I have to listen to your stories. I know Wonder Bar turned into like a nightclub.
Yeah,
from the time I know it, yeah,
it was like a really cool jazz bar. Like we had Harold Lane, who used to play for Sammy Davis Jr. He was like our house drummer.
Yeah,
the Reverend Johnny Horner, who's also a cab driver. You guys have heard that episode.
Yeah.
But like, so you were at the steakhouse, and you're at Faneuil Hall.
Yeah,
and
so that's where like spots. I bounced around for a while. That's where, you know, the steakhouse was my first job. I was there for 4 years, you know, and then once I left, I bounced around a few different places trying to find the right money, you know, of where I was going to be, and that's where I eventually found my next home, which was this neighborhood bar in Dorchester, the finest part of Boston, Dorchester. It was neighborhood spot. I mean, that's like. Crazy times, you know, being in there. I mean, I'll never forget. I mean, there was one time I actually took a gander at the people in the bar, and I was like, this is a true neighborhood pub. Look down to the right, and there's a group of correctional officers and cops on one side, and then I look down to the far left, and there's the neighborhood coke dealer.
The people are gonna arrest.
I was like, yeah, exactly. The people that they have arrested or they've seen in jail before, down the far end, and then right in between is your regular mix of the other neighborhood people. I mean, the couples and stuff, you know, coming out on their first dates. And
what happened there?
Yeah, so there was it was probably the first year and a half, I think. Might have been almost a 2 year mark of working there. I started to get a little comfortable, you know, knowing a bunch of the regulars around and everything. And this is the time I probably should have been fired. Actually, definitely should have been fired.
I've had a lot of those moments.
Yeah. Also the point where I realize it's extremely hard to get fired from here. Because we knew, I mean, each night, you know, you end the night, you have your couple of shift drinks, you know, and so that's where normally the cleaning crew, when they came in around 3 or 4 a.m., that was your cue, all right, time for us to leave.
Yeah, we've been here too long.
Yeah, we've been here, like, the bar closed at 1, so clearly, yeah, if it's 4 a.m. and the cleaning crew is coming in, yeah, all right, it's time for us to leave. So we also knew, because of neighborhood spot, smaller venue, Mondays and Wednesdays, there were no cleaning crews. So we decided to have a bit of a lock-in one Monday night.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes.
Lock the doors, keep the regulars inside.
Exactly.
Go for it.
Yep. Everybody left. We finished. We cleaned. We mopped everything around. And just decided we knew there was one section of the bar where this is where the owner sat that the cameras didn't see.
Okay, got the blind spot.
Yeah, so the one blind spot. Yeah, exactly. So that's where we sat with our, you know, neighborhood dealer of all the assortment of whatever you were looking for.
Right. Kicked out the cops first.
And yes.
Kept those guys.
Yeah,
nice.
Kept those guys. It was only a handful of us. So we're sitting there snorting lines all night long, you know, and drinking away, smoking in the bar and everything, like old times. And we had this one kid that was with us, this kid Patrick, you know, is typical Irish, you know, Patrick, who was starting to nod off, like falling asleep sitting there. So I kept telling him, I was like, Patrick, just leave.
Patrick-o narcolepsy.
Yes, so I was like, just leave, man. Like, clearly you're not hanging with us anymore, just go. Well, he just slowly kept moving further and further down the bar. And so we figured at some point he had left. Fast forward, you know, as the night continues on, all of a sudden I realize, I'm looking down, I'm like, fuck, dude, it's like 5:30 in the morning. The owner's going to be here in an hour.
Oh, my God.
We need to leave. As we've been smoking and everything, and there's like all the smoke still clouding inside the bar. And so we leave. It's probably like 5:45 or something. The owner comes in around 6:30. So I go home, pass out, finally wake up to probably, I don't know, 20 missed calls from the owner of the bar.
Oh, no.
Yep. Multiple text messages, you know, saying from him, call me immediately. James, please call me immediately. And then even missed calls from the girl I was working with that night as well, text from her being like, hey, what happened? Like, did you leave the front door unlocked or something? I was like, no, I definitely remember locking the front door. So I finally, I was like, and she's like, oh, did we leave Patrick there? And I was like,
Oh, no.
Shit.
No. No.
That must have been it. I was like, oh, fuck. We probably left Patrick there. I was like, all right, so I'm still in bed, naturally, and end up calling my boss to figure out, you know, what's going on. And that's where he starts reaming me out. He's like, dude, do you know what I walked into? I found Patrick asleep in one of the booths. You have any idea what he could have done? He could have hurt himself. He could have walked out the front door, you know, could have let in all these homeless people who live around Dorchester, and they could have drank the bar dry.
Yes. Oh, my God.
You know, he could have woken up calling all his friends, had them all come down, drink the bar dry. I'm like, Ray, you know who he is. That's not going to happen. And so I have this conversation. I'm like, I'm freaking out, though. Like, as he's like, well, I'll talk to you later when you come in. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, this is how it's going on. So I hang up the phone call. And then I hear from the other room next to me, my roommate, who's another bartender in Boston as well, chimes in real quick. He's like, hey, what was that all about? Did you get fired? I was like, I don't think so.
He's like, is there going to be a problem with the rent?
Yeah, that was his concern. Yeah,
thanks
like,
for caring.
Did you get fired? I was like, no. He's like, well, what happened? He's like, oh, apparently I left somebody asleep in the bar last night. He's like, oh, that's all? Ha, Jamesy that I work with, he's done that twice.
Dude, that happened like so when I worked at the karaoke bar New Year's Eve. So we always have this like writer. He was like super eccentric, and he wrote for King of the Hill. Like he wrote for Mike Judge, and he was crazy. He always had like a 3-ring binder trapper keeper.
Yeah,
and he was just like scribble down stuff like that all the time. And like he was there on New Year's Eve and just being weird and freaking people out. And we kicked him out, so we thought. And then New Year's Day, 5 p.m., I go to unlock the door, and this dude, like, shoves the door wide open, like, blocks me in, and comes running out. Like, he had been in there the whole time.
No shit.
Yeah, like, till 5 p.m. on New Year's Day. Like, what a way to start it. But speaking of shitty roommates, I'm one. We had me and my my former roommate. I live alone now, but, like, when I had a roommate before he got wifed up with his boyfriend, we had this awesome pad, and there was this neighbor across the street who was cleaning his gun, and he didn't realize he had a bullet chambered.
Oh!
And it went off, and my roommate across the hall, we're across the hall from this guy, was like walking around the apartment talking to his mom. This bullet travels through his wall, through the hallway, through our wall, through our like utensil drawer, blowing out a giant hole, going up above the kitchen island where my roommate was in the path of like 30 God. Seconds earlier.
Yeah.
And then like hit a mirror on our back wall, shattered the mirror and fell to the floor.
It was a 357
mag. It was a Glock. It was like a 9mm and it went through everything. And it's just thin walls. Yeah. And cuz I heard a lot of stuff from my neighbor. Yeah. I think my neighbors thought I was a maniac. They must have heard some stuff. Oh my god. Anyway, and so he called me to tell me, and as a shitty roommate I am, I'm like, he's like, yeah, the cops are here. Like, they're going, like, I'm like, did they find our shit? He's like, no. I'm like, are you all right?
That was my only concerns, yes.
That was my second question.
Did they find our shit? No.
Yeah, are you doing all right? Awesome, man. And now you're in Colorado. Like, we're working together. You're a fucking assassin, dude. I love working with you. You crush it.
There was, you know, for like I said, bounce around, you know, different areas of Boston. So that's where initially getting that start right outside Fenway. I was so used to that, you know, initial rush of people coming in, you know, a few hours beforehand. So that's where I got my, you know, stature from, or yeah,
you got
stamina.
You got your speed too. Yeah. Yeah. Speed, yeah. You just hit everybody at once and then just wait for them to hit their paces. But every time there's an event, that's like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, hurry up and wait. Then, oh shit. And then it's like, all right, cool. Those are the alcoholics. Those are the newbies.
I can start
my speed for that. Yeah,
that's where I also catch myself occasionally here. That's where people have noticed, you know, a little bit in the Denver scene of, you know, I'm coming from Boston. We're pretty quick moving. So, you know, if you don't know exactly what you want when I ask you, I'm moving on to the next person.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you guys having? Yeah. And then they look and go, I'm like, you waited here 5 minutes. Like, you push your way to the front of the bar and you don't know what you want.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
And it seems like I'm being rude, but you're being rude.
You're being exactly
to everybody in this bar that like knows what they want. Yeah.
Or even worse, when they're standing over the menu and they're like, "Oh, what beers do you have on draft?" As I walk over there, I was like, "Well, that's a stupid question."
Yeah.
Because the menu's right here in front of you.
Yeah.
And then I move on to the next person.
Yep. Bye.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, so you started off in Boston. Are you from Boston, or where are you from?
No, so I'm originally from New Hampshire.
Okay, Sandler country.
Exactly, yeah. I grew up in a real small town about a half hour from Adam Sandler in Manchester.
All right, Manchester. Yeah. I end up in Manchester in a cell of ripping rails with some stranger. It's wicked weird, kid.
They call it Manch Vegas up there, actually. I grew up real small town. I mean, we didn't even have a stoplight. We had a flashing yellow. That was it.
Wow.
Gas station, you know. Yeah, that's where I grew up. But no, I mean, one crazy story. I mean, obviously, it's a small town, so a lot people know about a lot of things that happen out there. I had heard through one of my best friends I grew up with about this story, about this thing happening. And I was like, holy fuck, like, is this for real? And he tells me, he's like, yeah, so, you know, when it comes to revenge things, you know, people, like, you get to plan it out, or, like, I mean, this guy really planned out this revenge.
It's a dish best served cold.
Yes. So it first started with, it was my buddy's older brother. I was out at a party one night and had beef with this guy or some small town New Hampshire. Who knows what it could have been? You know, he probably kissed some girl.
It's a girl, or it's money.
Exactly, yeah. Something stupid. And so he all of a sudden finds out. I don't know if he found out that night when it happens or a little bit after, but apparently this kid, so my buddy's older brother, had his car at this party and his windows rolled down. And this other kid that he was beefing with apparently pissed all over the driver's side door and inside the car. Horrible thing. Like, this dude's all pissed off, finds out about this. So finds out about this guy that pissed all over the inside of his car, super pissed about it. No pun intended.
That's what you did there.
Yeah. And so, as I was saying about revenge,
I'd be like, you're in trouble. Sorry, yeah. That's all I got. Terrible.
Planned out this whole scheme. All right. Couldn't believe, like, this. He waited 6 months. Long time after this kid pissed in his car.
It's kind of Monte Cristo shit.
Yeah. Waited 6 months, roughly. And apparently showed up to the guy's house around 2-3 in the morning with a 5-gallon container of gasoline and dumped it all inside the car and lit a book of matches and set the car on fire.
Holy shit. I feel like that's like revenge math is like way off. It's like somebody like spit in your eye and you shot him with a bazooka. It's like, okay, that's a little extreme.
Yeah,
all right,
literally
so
extreme.
The escalation has happened.
So apparently this had all happened. I wasn't there for any of this, had heard this, you know, from my best friend I grew up with, whatever. And all this stuff had happened. And so fast forward, this is years later. Oh, apparently, no. The kid never knew who did it. Like, still to this time, had no idea who had set his car on fire because, you know, he waited this long time. And so I'm out drinking. It's New Hampshire in a small town, so I'm at this guy's house. Like, this other person's house.
I'm in the woods drinking behind somebody's house.
Drinking at this guy's house, and happened to mention about how I had heard about this story.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
That's all I mentioned. I was like, oh, and like the guy whose car that got set on fire was there. And so he had talked to these other guys. As I'm standing there, I'm having a great time. You know, I was probably like 19, I think, at the time. And shooting the shit, standing around. Also, I'm standing in the kitchen. Actually, I'll never forget this. What they had to drink there? Zima.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's the 90s.
Zima.
Oh, yes. Delicious.
Yes. There was cases and cases of Zima there.
And I bet there still are cases and cases of Zima there.
Yeah. And so I'm, like, standing in the kitchen, you know, shooting the shit with these people, and all of a sudden this guy comes up and pulls some sort of handgun out on me.
What the fuck?
Yep. And literally stands there and stares me down and goes, oh, do you have something to tell us? Like, we heard you know about, like, this car getting set on fire. And I looked at him and was like, yeah, I heard about it. I don't know who the fuck did it, though.
You were just like, yeah, I heard about it with a gun pulled on you? Like,
oh,
no problem.
Oh, yeah,
you
no. Like,
you didn't
then
fart uncontrollably or shit your pants?
No, this I didn't. I remember this very specifically. Standing there as the guy has got the gun, just holding it out. Like, not even, like, pointing or, like, anything like that. Just had it out, showed that he had it. And I stared at him, and I looked at him. I was like, listen, man, there's about 15 people in this kitchen here right now. So if you're really going to shoot me in the middle of your kitchen, there's a lot of witnesses, so you're probably not going to do that. All right. And I don't have anything else to tell you. And as I finished saying this, all of a sudden, like, the guy had put his hands behind him, and he pulls him out, and now he doesn't have it because apparently somebody walked behind him knowing this is all going on and took the gun away from him.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. I can't believe you brought reason into it in that, like that moment.
It was like at that moment. I mean, like seeing that, I thought of it and I was like, there's no way this guy's actually going to shoot me.
Jesus, man, that's
around
crazy.
All these people. Yeah, I was like, this is small town New Hampshire. He's trying to be tough, showing that he had a gun. Stupid kid stuff.
I just I use reason in those situations where I've had like the angry boyfriend because I like accidentally slept with his girlfriend or whatever and like he wants to like kill me and he totally could kill me and I'm like, listen, yeah, man, if it wasn't me, it'd be somebody else, so you can't really be mad at me, you gotta be mad at her.
Yeah.
I didn't know you guys were together.
Yeah,
please don't hurt me, sir.
Oh, that's right, that was the other story.
Oh, what do you got?
One motto I grew up on, well, I wouldn't say grew up on, but eventually was taught, was, you know, boyfriends are speed bumps, not roadblocks.
Oh, Jesus.
Kind of a douchey thing.
Where is this going? Yeah. Oh, no.
So this was, I mean, the same bar back in Dorchester I worked at, you know, should have been fired from, had this, you know, few regulars, tons of Irish people that came around there, and I had this one girl that kept hitting on me every time she came in, just kept hitting on me, and I was like, oh, like, all right, like, listen, I know you have a boyfriend, your boyfriend is a regular here, so I'm really not trying to step on that. Yeah. Now, it had taken a few months, and finally, we had gone out as a group, you know, a couple times and hung out, and that's, you know, that's where I could see she was still into me, all this stuff. And so, finally, the worst of all days, I decided, fuck it, I'm going for it.
What do you mean, the worst of all days?
It was Christmas.
Oh, God.
So that's where this bar was big for, like, we were closed Christmas Eve.
You decided you're
going to
go for
Day
it with this guy's girlfriend on Christmas. Merry yes. fucking Christmas, dude.
Yes. Because I had had a few, like, you know, we were always open Christmas night. That was one of the busiest nights at the bar. And I didn't have to work this because I chose to work New Year's Eve instead. It's one of those, you work one
you
of the
trade
other.
Them, yeah.
Yeah, you trade them, yeah. So I had this one off, and I'm sitting there drinking. I said to my buddy that's sitting next to me, I was like, fuck it, I'm going for it now. Like, if she's offering, I'm taking it. That was the last point I remember, specifically. Because I do remember leaving there and then going to the next bar, which is J.J. Foley's, it's one of the latest places you can get served in Boston. And so I remember being there, and then next thing I know, I'm in an Uber, I guess, and show back up. Apparently, I went back to his apartment with him and his girlfriend, okay? And he's so drunk, he's puking outside. I don't even remember any of this. Like, I remember being at the bar I worked at, going to this next place, and then getting in an Uber. And the next point, I remember I'm getting chased out of this house. All right. So
whatever for.
So apparently, as we took the Uber, she talked me into taking the Uber back to their apartment where she lived with him and his parents in this apartment. Yes. And so, apparently, like, I mean, I have no idea where I am. We go upstairs. Apparently, she put him to bed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because of how drunk he is. And then we're just out on the couch. So I start making the moves, and we're making out on the couch. And it's all dark. And then this is my snap to moment of clarity. Is I come to seeing him walk in. What the fuck? Smashing a light down onto the ground. What the fuck is going on here? Screaming at me. And I'm like, dude, I have no idea. Like, because I was so blackout drunk, I don't remember getting to this point or even being here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He's smashing the light down, screaming all the, get the fuck out of my house. Get the fuck out of my house. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, I have no idea that this even happened. And then next thing I know, his parents come walking upstairs and are screaming at me as well. Like, you better get out. You better get out. We're calling the police. I'm like, calling the police for what? Like, I have no idea how I even got here. So I'm like, how do I, where's out from here? No idea how I even got into this.
Yeah, you're just a squirrel trying to get a nut.
Exactly, yeah. And so they're like screaming at me to get out. I'm like, where's your door? How do I get out of here? And then finally come walking down the stairs, get out the front door, and his buddy happens to be coming in at the same time I'm getting kicked out. So he has no idea what's going on. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm trying to leave. They're like, just fucking leave. I was like, all right, I'm ordering an Uber right outside their house.
Oh, my God. I would have walked a couple of blocks.
So that's where I was informed. I should have done that. Yes.
you were told?
Yes. I was saying, I'm like, I'm trying to get a ride. I don't even know where the fuck I am. All this stuff. Yeah. And as his buddy's coming in, he's screaming all this shit about what had happened. Buddy ended up taking a swing at me or something. And I don't know. I just remember walking down the road and eventually getting a ride home.
Yeah. All right, folks. That's Boston yeah. James, the incubus. Don't leave him alone with your girlfriend.
They don't call me Mrs. Steel. You go for nothing.
Dude, awesome. Thank you so much for coming tonight, man. I appreciate yeah. it. We're going to do this again.
Oh, yes.
Everybody, Boston James, say bye to the people, buddy.
Thank you, people. It's been great. I'll be back again.
Well, it's last call, so let me give you a tip. The business card you just gave me will only serve as a divider between my cash and blow, and after my wallet starts to Costanzify, it'll be tossed out into my tri-monthly wallet purge. But thanks anyway. I'll text you. Never. Folks, it's been a blast. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And a call to my fellow booze slingers. Send in your stories to cockedtalesandwastednights@gmail.com. You can remain anonymous if you'd like. Thanks for listening, subscribing, downloading, and spreading the word. Don't be afraid to give me a good review, even if you're lying. And check out my video, Just Close It, on YouTube. I promise you'll laugh. If you want to support the podcast, check it out on Patreon. I don't have any extra shit there, but I'll happily accept donations. Worth a try. I mean, I stopped doing the ads in the middle of the thing. You'd think somebody would... Never mind. Hey, we'll see you next time on Behind Bars. Cocktails and Wasted Nights. Cheers!